We made it here in 4.5 hours from the airport. The only thing we had in our favor was we took the car. We'd have forgotten that, we might have just got in. And I loved it. Two alcoholics, you know. One of them driving, the other one knew, both of them knew which way to go. And neither one of them are right. I just loved it. I just thought it was wonderful. Took us a couple, 3 hours to get over wherever that was we were going. And they both knew the way to go, and they couldn't find the highway they knew we ought to be on. And they couldn't figure out which one ran into that highway. And I loved it. We'd drive up and go turn left. Yeah, three will take us. Yeah. And then the back seat would say, no, I think if you get back over there where we were, we can catch it there. Oh, I believe we can. And I thought, you ought to help these guys. I don't know where it is either. Kim says, I feel real bad about this. I don't worry about it. I don't have anything to do with Saturday night. Nobody like us, is there? God, I hope they don't find out about what we're doing. Think about that countdown a while ago. What if the Swaggart and that bunch got a hold of this deal? God, they think they have rally in the valley. Oh. Can't come up with what we've got, can they? God, what a meeting that was. Wasn't that something else? You know, if you hang around, you're going to catch this thing. I would like to thank Arnold. Poor thing. Didn't grow up. If he hadn't started smoking, he'd probably have been a pretty tall guy before his older. Had him a good crew and been great. God, I knew. You can tell when you walk in here it's going to be a sweet one. God, I just love it. When I walked in here, I thought, hell, I already knew it was going to be anyway. Joyce called. Hell, she hadn't talked to me 5 minutes. I said, I don't know where it is, but I sure do want to go. I don't know what the deal is, but if they're like her, I want to go. So she and I decided if I decided to get married again, we'd discuss it. And Kim's taking good care of me, even though we got to ride around a lot. But, hell, you know, I'd ridden an airplane. Car's fine, too. And Burl was the other one, in case you want. If y'all ever want to go to the airport to Annapolis, they know how to go. And nobody will ever go that way. It'll be a way. I bet you they don't know how we went. Shotgun Mary is not my wife. She would have killed me, I'll guarantee you that. She was going to shoot her husband for no reason. I would have given her a reason, I'll guarantee you that. I joined poor old Sam. I joined Sam's talk that I had not heard him. And the Eleanor. George, you very much too, dear. Hope your boyfriend there gets along all right. So. But I enjoyed Ann today and don't know how he's going to come out, but Ann's doing fine. And I'm real glad to be here. God, you're great people. I was a little afraid about it. You know, when you get north of Oklahoma, you have to start watching it. You run into some odd folks. I was a little worried about Joyce. She talks a little funny. And, I don't know how in the hell she survived New York and be as sweet as she is. It must have been a different block there that she is on. Because I've heard about those folks. Don't know them, but I heard about them. And I like to hear about it. Don't you like to hear about things? Because it's never right. And then it's so disappointing when you find out they're not that way at all. And then, hell, you got to find somebody else to be that way. But I am Jim Williams, and I am an alcoholic.
I am.
Isn't that deal? What's that new deal where you love sex or something? What is it? Codependency. The new one? Yeah, they got so damn many new things coming. They're calling everything we used to do damn many different names. They just, you know, they can't make any money out of this one, so they come up with a new one. That was the greatest. I love it. God, I wish I'd have thought of that. Chuck Chamberlain said years ago, guy's dead now, he used to say, what controls you? Got codependency, for God's sakes. If I'd have thought about that, I could have had all these hospitals organized. Think what, I'd be rich. We just would sit around. God, I'd have made a fortune. Everybody is, you know. Everybody's spending on something. It's the damnedest thing I ever saw in my life. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking about having a quickie deal. Where, you get fixed on the way home? And drive through. Why not? Then it won't take so long, you won't have to go to the hospital. Can you imagine? We go to Hazleton, tell them how we are, and they write it down and sell it to us because we identify with it. I told my sponsor, do you mean to tell me that we're that sick? He said, yeah, we're that sick. God. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. Well, some of you I know have been raised to be an alcoholic. I was not. I was raised to be a Southern. I don't have to go to your meetings. Since y'all were raised to be an alcoholic, you would have to. What is that? Aka? Aka? Akoia. What is the name of that? What is the name of that? COA. No. CIA. No. What's the name of it? ACOA. Yes. And CA. See, there's two of them that go together. Our treatment center books them, puts them together. What's the other one? ACA. Well, I'm not in that. I don't know why I'm not in it. Hell, I'd be glad to get in anything, especially a little something involved I wanted, but I haven't gotten any. Somebody told me I could go whether my parents drank or not. If they were Baptists, they probably would have been alcoholics that drank. So I could go ahead and go, but I didn't go. But I'm not one of those. My folks wanted me to be a Southern Baptist. Now, you know, we're the ones that pray for the Catholics. Well, they drink, you know. Presbyterians, of course, knew it was going to happen. And Episcopalians, they just got tired being Catholic. And the Methodists, they just didn't like water. I think I'd like to have been a Lutheran. They believe in doing everything just a little bit. And in Texas, we got 254 counties, and the majority of them, when I was coming up, were dry, which means we don't sell anything, we don't do anything, we just talk about people who do it, and they just don't do anything. You know, they have a guy up there telling them, just like me, if you think it, you might as well have done it. Hell, I knew I was thinking it before I even knew what it was, but I knew I must be thinking it. In fact, they had a heart. You know, the Southern Baptists can't even dance because you have to hold women. In fact, they have a hard time having children. I think if they'd had that envelope deal where you mailed it, they'd have never touched a woman yet. I finally got to be 13, which if you'll do what I was doing one day at a time, you'll get to be 13. And I got in the car with this girl one afternoon after school, and we got to mess around. I got those funny feelings, and I told them about it. They said, "We've been meaning to talk to you." I said, "I knew they had." See, it's not like AA, you know. AA said, "Well, it's old Kim laying the dish last night. If he lives, we'll get him." And this bunch, they hone in on you. They see your eyes, you know, that gleam in your eye, and they think, uh-oh, he's getting ready to do it. As soon as he thinks he's going to do it, we'll lose him. So they hone in on you, start praying for you. So this guy said, "We've been meaning to talk to you. What you need to do is get saved." I said, "What from? Haven't done nothing." He said, "Meet us before the service." So I met him before the service. We all got in that room. We all got down on our knees. We just prayed and prayed and prayed. They did. Prayed, prayed, prayed. Said, "Now, when they sing that last stanza, you get saved." Boy, they waited and waited. They'd point at you. "We're going to sing last stanza for that one right there." Hell, your throat hurts. You know they're talking about you. And I came down the aisle, and it's kind of like, "Hey, except don't give out any chips." They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are. And hell, I know I wasn't, but I liked it. Then they throw you in the tank of the handkerchief leaks. You choke a little, but you come out all right. Went to school the next day and saw that girl. Came right back. I said, "Well, we're going to have to do it again. It didn't take." They said, "No, you just don't do it." Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know if they could just say, "Don't do that." They didn't do it anymore. I said, "Well, how do you don't do it?" "Don't think about it." I said, "I wonder why I didn't think about that." I thought, "Well, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. Then tomorrow when I get up, I'll never think about it again." Got up the next day and thought about it more than I ever thought about it before in my life. I had no idea whether I'm the kind of guy that when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it all the time. And when I start not to think about it, that's all I'm going to think about. I used to try to wake up real quick before I thought about it. Finally got out of high school. I had to go to summer school to get out of high school. I don't think I was so dumb. It's just that I was always busy. Like the guy said, "I came by you yesterday afternoon. You were sitting out there in the car. I spoke to you. You didn't even speak to me." I said, "I was having a meeting." He said, "There wasn't anybody in there but you." I thought, "Hell, how many do you need?" I was already having trouble. I couldn't fit in with people, and I'd go with kids places, and they never did like me enough. And I couldn't get the right girl, and I just couldn't fit in. And also, my folks would say, "Jimmy would never want to do that." Yeah, I did too. Already done it once. Get ready to do it again. And their favorite phrase was, "Jimmy wouldn't be caught dead doing that. God, wouldn't you be caught dead doing it?" And then they'd say, "Jimmy wants to do that." And everything they knew I wanted to do, I didn't want to do it. Everything they knew I wouldn't be caught dead doing, that's what I wanted to do. 30 miles away was a town that was wild and wicked. And I heard about it. It had beer joint honky tonks, what they had. And I'd heard about it. And I told this guy one Saturday, that's before I knew you could do it during the week. I said, "We're going to slip over there, don't tell anybody, and we're going to find out what that's all about." Went over there and opened that door, and my God, there was that deacon I'd known all my life. With the warm girl in one hand, the cold beer in the other. I said, "My God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us." And we didn't even get to do it. You know, if you get caught before you do it, you ought to forget it. This guy said, "Well, he can't tell anybody." I said, "Hey, you got a better shot with Jesus than we do." But he was happier than I had ever seen him. And I liked the girl he's with on Saturday night a lot better than what he's with on Sunday morning. I used to think when I'd see him on Sunday morning that all deacons were just sad. Now I know, hell, he's just tired. We drank 2 beers, didn't taste good, didn't feel good, and I was glad to get out of there. And the next day I wanted to go to church, first time in my life. I said, you know, maybe you get old enough, you don't have to go. There he was, sad like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. So I told my buddy, I said, next Saturday we're going to go back, don't tell a soul. We're going to go back. His big town had two joints. And we went over there and walked into with a deacon I knew. I learned to do everything but commit adultery. I'd have done that, but I didn't know much about it. And you know how we are. Think about it all day long, drink a beer and forget it. Or if we do, we don't know where we did or not. I learned how to drink, didn't even know I knew how. You just drink one beer right after the other and don't stop. Just consistently drink one beer. I learned how to dance. Southern Baptist not allowed to dance. Fell down the dance floor and broke my nose. Did it five times after I learned how to do it. Blacked out, waked up the next morning, threw up just like I've been doing it for years. This guy called, said, how do you feel? I said, God, I feel horrible. He said, oh, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out and get drunk, black out, wake up the next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. Did not know you drank it any other way. I thought people who didn't drink like I drank didn't drink. I see them now, they're putting umbrellas in them. I guess they don't want any rainwater to get in there or something. They were already putting fruit in drinks when I was drinking. Not mine, because I too much acid, you know, bothers me. One Saturday afternoon, I was over at this town by myself, and I wanted to put off getting drunk as long as I could. So I was just walking. I walked by this post office, and there was a sign out there that said, we need you. I walked in there, and they did. They said, have you ever been to California? I said, no. We're going tomorrow. I said, God, I want to go. He said, sign right here. So I went home and told my folks I was going to go to California. They said, how are you going to California? You don't have any money. I said, I'm going to the Air Force. We're leaving tomorrow. Went back the next day and went to San Antonio, Texas. They really live one day at a time, that much does. And they were a funny bunch. They got up in the middle of the night, made their bed real quick like somebody's coming. Never did. Then they wanted to go eat. Hell, it's dark. Even if you haven't been drunk, you get sick eating that time of day. And they're all scared because they walked in groups. Whoever it was that was running our outfit decided we should take a surprise trip. And if they don't tell us where we're going, we can't tell anybody else. Nobody will know where we're going. Whoever it was running our outfit decided we ought to go to China. I'm in the Air Force, so we go to China by boat. I think they flew the Navy over and the Marines ran the boat. There's a lot of Chinese over there. They had a few trees and some hills and a lot of rice, but they mainly just made Chinese. They liked it. They were good at it. They enjoyed it. They just made Chinese. They lose some, but they're making so damn many it didn't make any difference. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you've seen all the Chinese you'll ever need to see. So I told them I was ready to come back home. We stayed 2 years. And we came back by boat. My folks said, where are you going to school? I said, hell, I'm not going to school. Wouldn't be caught dead going to school. Hate school. Couldn't get out of school and went to school. They said, if you don't have that piece of paper, you won't be able to apply for a job, let alone get one. Every man coming out of the service will have that piece of paper. God. I proved my folks wrong. I gutted that thing straight through 3.5 years, got that piece of paper, made sure that I didn't learn one single thing. I made sure that every course I took, I was going to pass it up front before I took it, and that it wouldn't benefit a human being whatsoever. You know what I like about you and I? You and I go to any length just to be right, even if it destroys us. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people will say, I could be wrong about that. Not you and I. Only time you and I'll ever use that statement is when we're damn sure we're right. Then we might say, well, I could be wrong about that. Having some minor difficulties with women. You put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I see some guys, they just go with a girl, different girl every night, different girl every week, and you're not supposed to be able to do that, by God. You've got to go with a pretty girl and one that you could be in love with and one that you could take home to your parents. You can't just go with any girl, for God's sakes. The only thing that's wrong with being the way I was is when you're walking around in love with no girl. Take me about 2 months to find that precious sick little thing. Then we'd be so much in love in about 2 months, I'd almost have to quit work. Then they'd just deteriorate from there on out. When I got to AA, I said, God, this is the greatest place I have ever been in my life. First time I'd ever been where they had the sick women group. And I like both kinds. I like the ones that got sick doing it, and I like the ones that got sick watching him do it. We weren't talking about you. Al-Anons have a hard trouble with that. Every place I worked always wanted me to come to work on Mondays. I don't have the flu on Thursdays. I have it on Mondays. And evidently, every place I work, alcoholics, it seems like we have an added responsibility that God wants us to make sure that all businesses operate properly. And it's hard work to try to keep your job, do your job, and see that they do it right. Some of those places that fired me are still operating doing it wrong. Which probably means most of us are too smart to be in business. Finally got out of a job and I couldn't get one. And the way I'd look for jobs, I'd get up every morning, I'd throw up and I'd spray. Then I'd go fill out one of those forms that asked you personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Well, it's none of their damn business. They even want to know where you live. I like to move around some. And sometimes people where I am like me to move around some. How are you going to remember all those addresses? Then the rest of the time, that's those blanks, you figure out, wonder what they'd like for me to say. Hell, you don't know them too well. That's hard work. Finally, I kept doing that and doing that and doing that, and finally I saved this one place that I knew they had an opening. And I knew a guy that was there, and I knew he'd help me get the job. I knew I'd get it. Walked in there, and the moment I walked in there, this guy says, you don't want this job. Damn. I said, yeah, I want the job. Everybody knew what I didn't want. Everybody knew what I wanted. He said, you don't want this job? I said, I've got to have a job. I have saved it. I want to go to work. I want to go to work with you. He said, you don't want this job? And he also said, I knew there's something about me he wanted to tell me, but he didn't know how to do it. And I could feel it, and I knew it, but he didn't know what to do. Also knew they was going to like it better when I left. So I went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning, threw up. I said, you know, I think I've been doing this for about 10 days. I think I'll take the day off. So I went out to the golf course and ate an old leg, an old piece of toast, and went around to the beer joint where my last spiritual advisor worked. And he said, God, you look horrible. I said, yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, my God, man, the way you're shaking, drink this beer. I said, oh, by God, I'm Baptist. We don't drink before noon. That's 10:30. He said, drink the beer. I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. You know, start thinking about women or something, it gets your nose and burns. Then you've got to drink the rest of the day just to kill the faint. And I don't meditate this deeply anymore. It's just when me, God, and the commode, and you say, oh, God, and it's stringy. You don't know where the end is. And you can't breathe, you'll get it back. This is an after-dinner talk. And you don't know whether you're coming or going. I don't meditate that deeply anymore. And when you meditate that deeply, it's tiring. And even in the hot summertime, you lean over there and that bowl was always just as cool. I told that guy, I said, I think I better go home and lie down. I think I'm really coming down with something. I'd love to live with me. I'm supposed to call on hospitals. And I'd get up in the morning, I'd get the car, and I'd take off. I said, God, I hate to go to that big old hospital. You have a hard time finding a parking place. When you do, you got to take that kit, go through the lobby, down through, wind around through that basement. And you know that guy. He's not going to buy anything anyway. See, you don't even have to stop. You just drive right on by, wait till 10:30, had another bad day again today. So I went home. I was living in Houston then. And I went home, and I decided what I need to do. Got in the living room, called all the Jim Williams together. And we decided what I need to do is commit suicide. And those guys will see in the Houston Chronicle, Jimmy Williams commits suicide. And they'll never get over it. They'll worry about not hiring me for the rest of their days. But I didn't know how to do it. Now I see it on television all the time now. Suicide, call that number. I bet they have pamphlets, softer, easier ways. Join our group. We're losing some, but we're gaining some all the time. This was even before overdose was popular. You know, and us guys, the older guys, think you ought to be sound in mind and body when you commit suicide. I don't like guns because I don't like noise of morning. And they splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. What kind of blade you use? Which wrist you cut? You got two. All they ever said was, cut his wrist with a razor blade. Which way do you cut it? Cut it up this way, cut it back that way. Which way do you cut? What cut? Do you have to have a straight edge? What cut of razor? I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went in the bathroom, got my razor blade, and sit down on the throne where I did a lot of things anyway. And I knew, what if I cut the left wrist? The left side would die, right side would be alive. What if I backed out, half dead, half alive? You know, even if we haven't done something before, we're pretty clever. So I knew if I cut both wrists, that I could bleed and die evenly. So I'm just sitting there listening to the drip, thinking about those guys are going to worry about it for the rest of their days. And the phone rang. Then I thought, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called? That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. You know, police have been trained by ministers. They'll stop you about 3 o'clock in the morning. Come go along with me. I've never talked to one yet that didn't have a personality change. You say, I'm not going. I have got to get home. I'm late now. I have got to get home. I'm supposed to be home at 7 o'clock. It's 3 right now. I have got to go. I'm sorry, but I can't go. Then they have a personality change. And they say, get out of the car. I say, by God, I'm not going to do it. Then they really go nuts, and you have to pacify them, go along with them. This guy said, where were you last night? And I said, I was right here. And he said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you know? And he said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody that knows more about where you've been than you do. I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, well, you either come down here or we'll come back out there and get you. I said, I'll just come down there. I'll be right down there. And he says, if I were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way. You're in trouble, brother. I said, that'll take me an extra 30 minutes, but wait for me. I'm coming. God, I left to live with me. I could live a week in a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. Been out the golf course, threw up all over the golf course, came back, had an emergency meeting, committed suicide. Now I've got to call another meeting, and it's only 11 o'clock. I thought, you know, things haven't been too good here in Houston. I bet you the Lord is trying to tell me to leave. And I'll tell you one thing. I've got $36, which was plenty to start a new career. So I mailed the key to the folks, filled up old quilts and blankets and stuff, and had just room in that old two-door car just for me. Had one piece of furniture, an old lampshade. I guess I was going to carry the light if I could find the plug. And took off and had a stop by and got a pint of whiskey just in case. Wake up the next morning about 150 miles away in an old town called Brownwood with $7. And I said, wonder how my folks are getting along. It's amazing when you know when it's time to call home. And I called them collect so they'd know it was me. And my folks said, what in the world are you doing in Brownwood? And I said, oh, just out riding around. They said, well, you want to ride by and have a cup of coffee? I said, oh, I believe we'll. I never shortchanged my folks. They're not going to get their money back. So I always give them my very finest story. In fact, I got to listen to it, and it was so horrible, hell, I cried with them. In fact, I said, God, if I'd have known it was that bad, I'd have left Houston 3 years earlier. And old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. God, with 107, you can almost go into business. So I knew I had to sweat that night out. So I sweat that night out, waked up the next morning, and got out of there, didn't sleep 30 minutes. Turned around to Ann Lee, and I said, Ann Lee, there's one little thing I left out last night. When I was down there in Houston having all that hell, I was drinking some. But I decided last night I shall never drink again as long as I live. You'll never have to worry about my being underfinanced. You won't have to worry about me ever again. My folks looking at me just like a blank wall. When I got an A, I went back up there. I said, do you remember that time? She said, which one? Then she said, well, I think I remember. When you drove off, I turned around to John and said, what do you think? John says, he's 33. He'll never live till he's 35. Said, we thought when you'd leave, it's probably the last time we'd see you alive. Well, I had no place to go. I've got all my stuff. And I remembered that I had helped a guy get a job in the Rio Grande Valley. And I heard they had palm trees down there, and it was a great place to go. Beaches and everything. I thought, hell, I'll just go down there. I know he'd be glad to see me. Stopped right out of Fort Worth, first filling station, happened to sell beer. I said, how far is to Waco? 79 miles. Let me have 3. And I end up at the Rio Grande Valley. You know where that is? That's the end. Countries. If you can't find your bottom, you can find it down there. They've got a little creek and they change countries. So I go down there and that guy sets me up. And I thought he'd invite me to his house, but he didn't. So he set me up in this old hotel and I stayed there 3 weeks. Never took my clothes out of my car. I'd get up every morning, go down that old elevator, cross the street, get my short sock shirt, go back up there. Did that every morning for 3 weeks. And they finally hired me. Now, they didn't hire me because they wanted me. People don't go down there looking for jobs. They come out of the Midwest to get out of the snow in the wintertime, and the rest of the time, people come out and fish and play. So they hired me, and for some reason, when I'd get a new job, I'd work 7 days a week and just get drunk and not drunk till I could get up into my place. And if they had somebody in my place, I'd tell them every day to get rid of them. And they did that there. It took me about 3 months to get into my place and get settled down to where I could start getting drunk like you're supposed to. And so I did that there. One afternoon, I was just too tired to go straight from work. So I will go home and lay down 30 minutes before I go got drunk. And the manager came by, knocked on the door and said, you've been here almost 8 months. We need to get better acquainted. I said, yeah. You want to have a beer? And I said, one, I guess. He was a drunk, just like me. 3 of us drunks ran that thing for 7 years. And he got screwed up with some girl who lost her jobs. I'm still trying to get married. I've been trying to get married since I was 5. And I figured out what my problem is. It's not working for me to be true with just one girl. I need to have a number one and a spare. And that's hard to do that when you're drinking. Because, you know, you call about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and say, can I pick you up about 7:30? Be fine. Might be 4 or 5 days before you get by there. But I finally got me a number one and a spare and got everything going pretty good. And my weekends were like this. I'd get off work. I worked Monday through Saturday noon, jump in the car, go to the golf course, have a heavy lunch like a 6-pack and a cheese cracker, play golf, get through, drink beer all the time, black out, be in bed, blacked out, passed out by 6:30, 6:45. Wake up at 10:45, 11 o'clock, go down to my beer joint, close it, and then whoever my best friends were at the time, we'd slip on over to Madam Morris and spend the rest of the evening in the daylight. We'd eat a little Wavis run chairs and throw it up. Or sometimes we skipped it and drink a little beer and taper off into Monday, and sometimes I made it, and sometimes I missed it. Well, this particular Friday, I'm traded off with a guy, and I'm over at number one's house. And you know, sometimes we're just too honest for civilians. They just can't handle it. I evidently had never mentioned number two. So about 11 o'clock, I'm blacking out, and I said, I just told her I thought I'd drop by and see number one, two. She just hadn't heard of it before. But I want to go to the bathroom first, and she followed me in there and wanted to discuss it. Do you notice they're putting carpet in bathrooms? That's because y'all are having meetings in bathrooms. You're supposed to have meetings out where they got couches and carpet and bed. Don't have meetings where they got commodes and bathtubs and hard surfaces. I was blacking out, so I don't remember what happened. And I'm living in a beautiful place, an old faded green trailer in an alley behind a motel. I had the rock yards a long time before they started putting them in. You see, the weeds come up through there, and I said, you'll never make it. I've already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed. So I'm laying there asleep, and something goes, wham! God, I jumped up, looked down, still had my clothes on. I said, oh, my God, I bet I was going somewhere early this morning. Looked down that old white shirt and had blood on it. Blood makes me sick, you know. Kept beating on the door, and I said, oh, my God, I have four knots on my head. Blood, I've wrecked my car. It's the police. I've wrecked my car. That's what's wrong. I've wrecked my car. And you can't get out of those trailers. The window's about like that. You only got one door, and they're standing there. Finally, I opened that door, and it's that 240-pound, 6'4" Baptist preacher saying, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I know I look like I'm ready, but I'm not ready. I don't know where the meeting is, but I can't make it. I cannot make it. I can't make it. I cannot make it. I cannot make it. I've got to have a beer. I just can't make it. He said, get in the car. God, got in the car, and I'm in total fright, can't breathe. And I said, preacher, I've got to have a beer. And he said, there'll be no drinking before the meeting. And we started to drive off. I said, preacher, I'm not breathing. I am not breathing. I'm going to have a beer. I am not breathing. Preacher, I am not breathing. You're going to have to let me out. You have to let me. I've got to get out of this car. I am not breathing. You know, Baptist preachers don't give a damn whether you can breathe or not. We drove up in front of her house, so I assumed the meeting's going to be there. My car looked like it hadn't been wrecked, so I knew it wasn't a car wreck. Walked in there. She did look like she might have fallen in a bush or something. God, I had four knots on my head. Knots on my head. So I went in that bathroom and looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll never know what really happened or what I really think happened. I probably lost my equilibrium, fell in that bathtub, and she stepped on me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married at the First Baptist Church, so it worked. We got married at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there'd be no drinking before the funeral ceremony. I told her, since she'd been married before, and I was pure, that it wouldn't be necessary for us to invite a lot of people. But she could invite a few of her close friends. Then I'm blacking out again on Friday night at 11 o'clock, and so I decided to invite my friends. And they say I quit around 3. When I got to the church and started walking across that churchyard, this guy, my beer distributor friend, came out of that and said, wait a minute, before you go in there, I want to talk to you. Said, you called me at 2:45 this morning, and I tried to talk to you. We're not here to see you get married. We're here because we don't believe it. He said, I'm going to tell you, of all of your friends, the longest bet on this marriage is 3 weeks. But I showed him. I hung it in there for 8 years. But my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag of morning. So I'd grab those cigarettes and grab that coffee and go in that bathroom, lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was through that door. Then I'd have to get upset, go make the living, then get drunk, come on and tell her what she was, and we did that one day at a time. Finally, I went back there and I said, preacher, this thing is not working. He said, you know what's wrong with you? You're missing the beauty of life. I said, yeah. He said, you know the fruit trees were in bloom? I said, no. He says, what you need to do is go get your wife and drive up the valley and smell the aroma and look at the blossoms. I said, yeah. Got in the car, went home, opened the door, and said, get in the car! He said, what for? I said, we're missing the whole damn thing. We're going to go look at the blossoms. She says, the blossoms. I said, yeah. Get in the car. She gets the car, and I go by and get a six-pack. Drive up the valley, see a sign, turn left, 14 miles to Matamoros, switch, went to Matamoros, switched to tequila, blacked out, missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job, went completely insane for 2 months looking for a job. I always like to change careers. I don't have one, so I like to change. I like to look for jobs you don't qualify for. Guy that managed a drug company, who was a drunk, just he was the most identical drunk to me. He and I used to get drunk together a lot, and we were ideal drunk. We got drunk a lot together, and we got drunk the same way. And he called me and said, I understand you're looking for a job. Well, I'm thinking about it. He hires me, and it takes him about 2 months to ship me to Fort Stockton, Texas. Isn't that terrible? Fort Stockton, Texas is west Texas. They've got little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. He said he sent me out there to learn the drug business, but I know he sent me out there because nobody else would go. There's 536 people live there, and 36 of them were making a living. I joined the 500. Now I'm supposed to stand in a drugstore with a pad with lines on it, and that pharmacist calls out R-O-M-I-C-E, and I'm supposed to write it down. And I can't do it. I'm moving. I cannot do it. That pharmacist kept looking at me, and he says, my God, you look like you're going to fly apart. I said, any minute. He said, well, take some of these. Now, this was before Valium. Understand Valium, both eyes crossed, you walk straight. This was just Librium, which is absolutely nothing. Little old bitty, two-tone green and black, two-tone green. Nothing to them, little old bitty thing. Hell, I took two of them. Nothing happened. I waited 15 or 20 seconds. I'm used to something moving or doing something, burning or doing something. It didn't do nothing. So I took three more. Then my knees just went, huh? And I said, God, now I know how to weave. Now I've got to learn new stance. Y'all have ruined the damn drug business. I used to get them for nothing. And you know what used to tickle me is out there in West Texas, he'd say, Jim, I'm a little shorter, 10 milligrams, 25 be okay? Be fine. See, they don't know that we don't go by milligram, we only go by size. So I took Librium daytime, drank beer at night, had one decision to make every night. After the third beer, never before, never after, if I'm going to close the joint, I stay on beer. If I'm going to go home early, I switch to bourbon. Put a pint of bourbon on top of those three beers and that Librium, and you go home like you're supposed to go home, blacked out. My ideal time was blackout right at the door. Sometimes a little early, sometimes a little late, but I always made it. Always blacked out right. I'm a good blackout driver. Never had a wreck blacked out. Bad drunk driver. I drive different speeds. I used to hit stuff, wasn't even moving. I end up getting recommended for a job back in Houston of March the 1st of 1965, and I moved back to Houston, and my new bunch never saw me drunk. Oh, what's her name, and I had finally developed such a nice, quiet, sweet, deep hate for one another that we were really relatively safe because the one that died first won. But it's best that we slept in separate bedrooms because it's just best for us. So we set up battle. None of my customers saw me drunk. And Christmas Eve of 1965, I took these administrators of these hospitals, and the in-laws and outlaws, we went out and played golf, and I got a little too hospitable, went to their house, got blacked out right at the door, just barely remember being there, and drove from one side of Houston to the other, blacked out. Nothing new for me. Waked up the next morning, total fright, just like I'm supposed to. Looked out there at my car. It is parked funny, but it's back. I'd even quit asking it how it got back. It never tells you. I'm not an alcoholic. And when I would be at anyone's house, which was seldom nowadays, I'd always call back and say, I sure am sorry about last night. I wasn't sorry about last night, damn it. I wanted them to... So I got in the car with him. I said, oh, my God, I've made a mistake. I've gone off with a perfect stranger. I know better. I should have taken my car, even though he's a little better. I just shouldn't have gone. And he's not my kind of guy. And I waited till we hit that old 610 loop, and I said, I'll buy a beer. I don't want a beer. God, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I said, I waited about 20 seconds. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I've got to have beer, and I've got to have one right now. Either let me off the top of this freeway, and I'll walk over there that you told him, or you take me over there. I've got to have a beer, and I've got to have it right now. And besides that, it's 11:20. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can wait. I can make that. I can handle total fright if I got a little light. So we drove and drove and drove in front of this old rickety-looking house, which happens to be the same place she was, Travis Club. Drove up in front of this old house. I said, this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Walked in the door, and some of the deacons were sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. And the guy walked up that bartender. He didn't look... The bar had an old piece of linoleum on it. Had holes in it. Hell... And the bartender, he didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. Program of attraction, you know. And this guy says, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what are you putting in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol. And the honey has already been digested. I said, indigestion is not my problem. You throw up right, you don't have indigestion. Drank part of it, curdled, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I thought, hell, I'm going to put on a show for these guys. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. All they do is just sit there and laugh and talk. Got a new animal in here today. I'm walking back and forth drinking that sweet, 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 sick. I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 10 years. Sick. I'm almost tasting that. Sick. Oh, sick. About 4:30, this guy said, I think we better go back home. I said, yeah. Let me out a couple of blocks before I get to the apartment. I knew I had to go get some bourbon because beer would not cut that sweet taste. He said, don't drink anything. We're going to pick you up in an hour and a half. I said, what for? We're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. I said, my God, we were there all day. I said, I'll be ready. So I got out and walked and walked. And then here he comes and back over there we go. Kind of a funny bunch. I saw a few of them kind of hugging and kissing and laughing. Rest of them, they didn't act like this too damn happy to be there either. Some guy got up and said some funny little old prayer. Some girl got up, talked 2 or 3 hours, and they just laughed like it wasn't a damn thing funny. Then some guy got up, talked 2 or 3 hours, and they just laughed. I said, I'm going to tell you something. This is a sick bunch of people. Then all of a sudden, they all got up, held hands, and said the Lord's Prayer. Every one of them. The Holy Spirit moved through that bunch. Every one of them started talking all the same time. Nobody listened. I said, I wonder how in the hell he did that. I thought, I'm going to keep my eyes open tomorrow night and see what he did. Me and the deacon were standing back there by the door, and here they come. Uh-oh, I see the deal. Men and women getting together, laughing, jumping in those cars and taking off. So I said, uh-oh. Stay here a little while. Let's go to those apartments, have a little drink, and talk about this damn thing. We went night after night after night after night. Nobody invited us anywhere. It doesn't rain in Houston, it just falls out. This guy called us. He said, I'll pick you up in 30 minutes. I said, it's raining. Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I'll be ready. Then one night, one weekend, or what's the name, had gone back to the valley. See if we had any friends left. We didn't go to a meeting every single night, every night. So I just locked the doors. pulled down all the shades, turned out all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 let it ring. Next morning he called and said, "Where were you last night?" I said, "I was right here watching television and enjoyed every damn minute of it, and I may do it again tonight." He said, "Well, you missed it." I said, "What did I miss?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Wasn't you there?" He said, "Yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you was supposed to hear." I thought, "My God, you've got to go every night. You'll miss it." Went every night for 3 months, got drunk. Every night for 3 months, got drunk. Every night for 3 months, got drunk. And I sobered up all by myself. And I decided, I'm really not one of you. Sorry. You know, I'd like to be, but when you're not alcoholic, you're just not alcoholic. The only thing that's really wrong with me is that I've just always been underfinanced. And if I can get properly financed, I can just tell all of them to shut it. And I'll leave town. Leave her, too. And I'll just fix it all. But I've already learned, first things first. So what I need to do is go back and officially resign and say, "Thank you very much." I went back and the meeting had already started. And I thought, "Oh, well, hell, it won't hurt me to sit through one more meeting. And then when I get through, I'll just tell him, thank you very much, and resign, announce it to all the group. And then I'll leave." Evidently, I'd called him about 2:30 one morning while drinking. I doubt it very seriously. I think they'll say any damn thing that... Well, when the meeting was over, here he comes. I thought, that's going to be convenient. I can just tell him. Before I could tell him anything, he said, "Don't you ever call me again." I said, "God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. They called you. And I'm going to tell you something your best friends do not tell you. Nobody likes you here. We don't get invited anywhere. They don't know me, so it's got to be you. And I'm going to tell you another thing. If I had as bad a personality as you do, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't ever have to worry about my calling you. If you're the last man on earth, you'll never hear from me again, brother. You'll never, never, never have to worry about hearing from Jim Williams ever, ever again." And I left. And he didn't. Till the next morning. Then I called him. He said, "Meet me at the club." And I met him at the club and he said, "Get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you like a dog here, you know." He said, "I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Teen, Al-Tot, and Al-Dog." There's absolutely no failure here. Never has, never will, impossible to, cannot, must not, never will fail. There's no failure here. Never has had a failure in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just does not fail. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. So now there's only going to be one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days. It's the only thing that you're going to get to do, but you're the only one that's going to get to do it. And you're going to begin today. You're going to get to make a decision every day whether you're going to go your way of life or our way of life. If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. So we're going to give you a decision to make this morning, whether you're going to go our way of life or right back out that door. I said, "I don't want to do either one." He said, "I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you were going to do." I said, "Do you mean tell me you don't care whether I want to or not?" He said, "Not a bit." I said, "The group doesn't care?" "Not at all." I said, "Well, if you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I don't want to do it, then I'll do it." He said, "Well, first of all, we got to get some things straight. It's your thinking that's wrong." I said, "How much am I thinking wrong?" "We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know." I said, "You put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think." He said, "That's for us." He said, "Now, we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. The things we're going to give you not to do is going to change. The things we're going to give you to do will just add to. Then it's going to happen over there." I said, "What's going to happen over there?" We don't know, but it always happens. That's how I'm going to tell you something. I've been listening to you and listening to you and listening to you. I've been listening to every single word you say. You never listen to me. I want you to hear me. I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. He said, there's two things that you must remember every day for the rest of your days. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. When you quit trying to understand, then you'll enjoy it. And no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation, it's never them, never her, never God. It's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for then? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the very one thing that got you here. But it's also the very one thing that, should it not change, will be the very one thing that's going to keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know that you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. He said, now, since you don't know how to not do anything, the first thing we're going to learn how to do is not take a drink or a pill. And this is the way we do it. You know that card that I gave you has four men, no women, on mine. Definitely, when you get squirrely, definitely before you take a drink or a pill, no matter what time of day or night it is, call one of those numbers. If you don't make the phone call, you didn't do it. Even if you didn't drink, if you didn't make the phone call, you didn't do it. Now, that's the way we're going to learn how to not do something. And this is what we're going to do beginning in the morning. First thing when you get up, you get down on your knees and you say these words and these words only. God, take me today. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what he has not done, nor what he needs to do. God can handle that all by himself. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean tell me you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Before I got down on my knees, I said, God, you know, I've been praying to you all my life, and I know that he don't know because he's a Presbyterian. But we're going to do everything this time just exactly like he says, so when we get enough this time, we can tell him to take it and shove it. So I got down on my knees and said that little prayer, and I got up, made sure I needed to go to the bathroom, picked up the phone, called him. He didn't even ask where I needed to go, and I said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. I made the club, and he said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it so much yesterday, I stayed home and messed around, and he said, what'd you do? Just stay home, sit in that chair, and think? I said, well, till noon, and I went to the club. He said, you don't know how to go to work. I said, how? He said, go get in the car. If you'll write that down, we'll catch it. Then he said, and besides that, later on, we'll do it more. But in the beginning, besides that prayer you say every morning, when you get in the car to go to work, invite God into the day. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you in today. Put that on the card, and we've got it. Then you got to come back to the club, walk in there, and you know how they are, out loud so everybody can hear. Get your coffee and sit down with us. Be quiet. Listen to the king's talk. Don't say anything. Hell, I know to get my coffee and sit down. Then they've got to tell you, when you're almost comfortable, it's time for you to go home, have dinner, come back to the meeting. Hell, I know to go home, have dinner, and come back to the damn meeting. But they've got to tell you out loud so everybody knows you're an idiot. You don't know where to go. And after the meeting, he said, now go home, get on your knees beside the bed, and thank God for the day. That's I do not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable damn day, and I hate you, and I hate AA, and I hate God. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like when you're praying to God, you don't mean it? And I said, that's right, and by God, I'm not going to do it. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the action you're taking that you don't know you're taking that's going to cause all things to happen that you had no idea was going to happen. And after you've taken the action that you didn't know you were taking and all the things that's going to happen, you had no idea was going to happen, all the things that you think are going to have to happen will never need to happen. Well, hell, I understood that for God's sake. I said, do you mean to tell me that God, you, and the group does not care when I pray to God whether I mean it or not? He said, not a bit. He said, God is not depending on you for your relationship with Him. He'll handle that all by Himself. So I just got in my car, went home, locked the door, so number one couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees and said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if He don't care and they don't care and God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. I'm driving down that old 610 loop one morning, right over Memorial Drive, about 9:15, and this God that I had never known as my friend moved into that car with me. And the first time in my life, I knew something different than I'd ever known it before. And I knew I'd never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew it. God stayed with me all that day. I thought, man, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines, and I'm going to go save some souls. Old Oral better look out, because Jimmy is coming. I thought I might even let him go along and put up the tent. I couldn't wait for him to get back to that club, and as soon as he walked through that door, I said, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. I knew they were going to make me the leader. Now, they don't like it coming back at them, but he did it, got his coffee. We moved into the other room, and I put him right down there. And I stood right there, and I told him the deal. And he grinned just a little and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, my marriage, we're going to leave it just like it is. I'll send you to a guy that's already got his worked out. Sent me to an Episcopalian. You know they don't know. And this guy says, well, what are you doing now? Are you married? And I said, well, legally, but not really. I said, she and I do not sleep together. We don't sleep in the same bedroom. We have no sex or anything. I've been praying for somebody to have sex with her. Nobody will. And I said, I've got a girl that I know she's for me. I can tell it. We can feel it. It's perfect. And she's been sober almost a month. And they won't let me do it. And I'm having brain damage not doing it. He said, well, that's good. Don't start up anything, and we'll practice on what's-her-name. He said, you're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? You saved some of them? He said, well, I don't know, but you're not going to tell her. And you're never going to do anything to get Al-Anon's children, friends, or anything to work her around to get her to do what you want her to do. I said, never. He said, never. And you're going to pray for her. And I said, I'm not. You pray for her. He said, yes, you are. And you're going to say these words. In the beginning, you may have to say it 100 times a day. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it become what you want it to be, and show me the truth. I said, I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me. He said, remember, what you want has nothing to do with it. So I started saying that old prayer and prayer and prayer. And finally, I went back to him and said, you ought to take her to Al-Anon. Says my wife, Sardi, take her to Al-Anon. Well, she's not any better. Said, no. Al-Anons, I want you to know that I love you very much. They took her to you, and she found you depressing. And the more they took her to you, the more she found you depressing. Call me day or night if you need any help of any kind. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I want you to know, you proved to me, I don't know what you do, but I think it's absolutely outstanding. And you've got a friend in me. In fact, I live with one now. We sleep together a lot, everything. And we're liking it, doing fine. So I can communicate. Now I forgot to think about something else. Forgot where we were. Finally, see, I was doing all that praying for her. It had nothing to do with her. It had nothing to do with my relationship with her. And that old love, lust, sex thing surfaced in me, and hell, I've got it. And I didn't know that's what it was, and I didn't know what it was. Now I've got it and can't get rid of it. And I told him I had it, and told him and prayed to God, and God wouldn't remove it and wouldn't work, so I told the group. One of the girls in the group said, you're not supposed to tell that group. So I went over and told another group. One of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here. We're just concerned. My sponsor said, usually when you stop acting on something, God transforms your mind and removes it. That's not happening to you. We're so tired of hearing about that thing you've got. Everybody's sick and tired of it. Don't you tell another soul about it. Oh, what's your name's gone back to the valley to see on a vacation. You go home and you lock that door. Don't you come out of there. Don't you call me. Don't you call in. They can never make up their mind. One time it's call them all the time. Now don't call them at all. And you and God, for some way, have got to get that thing settled. I went in there and I prayed all day and cried and cussed and did everything. And about 11, 12 o'clock that night, I went to sleep. And the next morning, that baby was gone. I didn't even tell them about it. They're so smart. So after the fourth meeting, we all went out to ice cream. We was all sitting around the table, 8 or 10 of us. And I said, well, I guess I might as well tell you all. They said, oh, we knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? They said, well, you need to know that you're going to always be the last to know. I said, why is that? We don't know. After that part of my sickness was gone, you know what me and old what's her name had? Nothing. You know what? How to get sick? Make something out of nothing. So we end up getting divorced, and I marry me a Southern Sunday school teaching and singing in the choir Baptist, civilian, with a son that's a Baptist preacher. Now, you can't get it any more Baptist than that. And I knew that was going to be it. And it looked like we was going somewhere. It looked like it was going to be fantastic. She was in a screaming marriage, and so was mine. We kept our mouth shut and thought it was wonderful. It's terrible. So it didn't take us too long to fly apart. And then after, we was there for several years, but we didn't notice it. Yeah, I like alcoholics. Hell, we can stay in, you know, mud knee deep and don't notice it about 10 years. And then first thing we say is, looks like we might have had a rain, you know. First time we noticed the mud. Wonder where it came from. And now I've got a bad deal. I've got a girl that I shouldn't be married to. She's a Yankee in the first place. She's an Al-Anon in the second place. She's a Catholic. Well, till she married me, she was. Catholic said, bye. And it's not supposed to work. She's a little younger than I am, but my aunt said, so is most everybody else. And we've had the grace, best 4 years of my life this last time. I've never known the real joy and happiness one day at a time that God's given me this last 4 years. And I've had some great years in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, if I hang around till August 25th, I'll have 25 years. And I really ought to think about leaving because it's hard adjusting to this new life I've got because it's hard for things to be good all the time. You know, I still try to think how bad my work is, even though it's not. Wouldn't it have been terrible if we'd have missed it? What if we'd have missed it? What if we had have missed it? All the things that we went through. Do you want to be perfect? Well, you were. Do you know what you did? Everything exactly like you're supposed to do it. Believe that? There you did. You don't know it yet, you will. Isn't that wonderful? I did everything like I was supposed to. And I was good at it. And I was thorough, weren't you? You did it in depth, didn't you? Did you hurt? You bet. Hurt! And they said, Jesus bled? You bet he did. So did I. You? You bet. We know what it is. I could hear the drip. Old Swaggart proved it to us. Jimmy Swaggart? Didn't he? He preaches repent. He did everything he could, right? He did, didn't he? Except he left out one thing. He didn't repent. He and God had all the anointing. Everything came out of the Bible. He had the healing powers that God used him and everything else, but he forgot one thing. He forgot to tell another human being. And that's what we do. We admit it to God ourselves, another human being, and our lives are taken over and transformed. And he left that out. If I'd have known he was having trouble, we could have taken my car. And I could have told him, hell, go ahead and do it. God will forgive you. Don't worry about it. Get in there, eh? Get you fixed up. I was really grateful for him because my second wife got into all that. And they just thought we were a little lesser than they were. And God, I want to tell you something. Anybody ought to know of a certain group of people that's in it. It's you and I. We're in it. You and I, without a shadow of a doubt. I know a few things about you and I. I don't know about any other group of people because no other group of people tells me about them. But I know about you and I. I know where I am today, and you know where I am? Right where I'm supposed to be. You know how I am? Just exactly like God created me to be. Isn't that something else? And so are you. You know you and I are not late, and we're not early. We're right on time. You know why we are? Because we're on Almighty God's time. How do you think you got here? Did you know where you was coming when you got here? You know, get up in the morning and say, I've got to run out there and get drunk and have a car wreck so I can get there, eh? You thought you were out there supposed to try to fit in and have children and do things. You didn't have it. Only children you had is because God chose you to have the children. Only reason you are somebody's child is because God chose it. I need to stay here long enough so I know that. See, I know now, I know tonight. And I've known this really something else. It's been great to me. This last year and a half, 2 years, I've had the greatest walking, living experience with God himself, knowing him as my only father and my only parent and the only one I ever needed. And the rest of it was just to be. And that he, without a shadow of a doubt, I know about you and I. I don't know when he chose us. I just know he did. He may have chose us even before we was born. I don't know. But I know this much. You and I went out there and did exactly what a person needs to do. You and I went out there and did everything we could do to destroy ourselves and anybody else who would go with us. And we couldn't do it. Why? Because all that time, God had you and I in the palm of his hand. All that time. It was not going to be. Because anybody that's chosen by God is going to go his way of life no matter what they do. If God takes us early, it's because there's some pain involved that he knows we don't need to go through it. And I know that today because I've gone through it with some people that's lost their children. They lost their people. And they found out from God himself that God took them so they wouldn't have to go through some pain they couldn't go through. Without a shadow of a doubt, there's no doubt about it, that you and I were not supposed. You know why we didn't fit in? God's children are not supposed to. God's children are not allowed to fit into the world. God's children are to be in a kingdom that he creates and live in that kingdom and be sent out to do whatever it is he wants done. And 90% of the time, they're not going to know what he's doing because it's a total mystery, because it's of God himself. And nobody knows, for you or for me, what that is. And look what he did. Did he have you prepared for me when I got here? Sure did. that it was someone prepared for you when you got here? Without a doubt. Almighty God puts us together from every walk of life He brought us. From every place. Because He knew that you and I could not live